Box to Box Stoppage Time.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Hello and welcome to Box Stoppage Time, a show where over the next 25 minutes we'll traverse the week in football to bring you our games, teams and hot topics from the week. And while the Euros are in full swing and will flavour this edition strongly, there's always plenty happening on the domestic front. Derek Dyson and Michael Edgley are with me. Derek has got the new ball at the Healesville Sanctuary, and I was a touch surprised, Derek, to see that the game you'd selected was Scotland versus Germany, given that you are a proud member of the Tartan Army abroad. But it was the Euros opener for you, Derek, your game of the week.
Yeah, it was a hugely significant game. It was obviously the first one of the tournament. Came off the back of quite appalling opening ceremony. I mean, I felt like they plunged new depths. You know, I don't know what my expectations were, but it was pretty bad, say the least. I think they should just do away with those. I don't know, does anyone care about opening ceremonies, honestly? I think there's just the dancers and the people involved, but apart from that, no, it wasn't the start that the Tartan Army wanted. As Germany put down that early marker in the tournament, there was some real early optimism, and there was some fabulous fan footage of some Scotland fans on a train doing the whole Mel Gibson / aka William Wallace scene from Braveheart. Take it away, Adam.
Run, and you will live. But years from now, when you are lying in your bed at night, will you trade all those tomorrows for once, aye, just once, when you can see they may take their lives, but they will never take our freedom!
Was the rallying cry on the barn in Munich, but unfortunately that was as good as it got for the Scots. It only took the Germans 10 minutes to go into the league through Wirtz. Musiala put in a sensational goal. He laid out a marker for a potential player of the tournament. Kai Havertz got in on the act with a penalty. And then there was that red card, as we spoke on the main show, terrible challenge from Ryan Porteous. No complaints there. Ball groove, that was a pure hit from him. I love it when a ball doesn't spin, just stays static in the air and sort of rises into the goal. Emre Can, I've forgotten about Emre Can. Can't believe he was actually young enough to make the squad, but he scored a great one. It was the biggest win in an opening match in the 66-year history of the tournament. Germany had 94% passing accuracy. In fact, on his own, who's the name of the retiring player from Germany? They brought him back from Real Madrid. Toni Kroos had 99% passing accuracy. Thank you very much. And they had 655 passes compared to Scotland's 193. So Scotland well beaten on the day. We mentioned the finishing. And also, I tell you what, I like the Germany kit as well. I think that looks class. I like the lines through the sides and onto the shorts. So Scotland have got to live to fight another day. But well done, Germany.
For those people that are really interested in Scottish football, there's a YouTube channel called Copper 90, and a young Australian kid who's very popular these days, Ellie Menjum. He does these fantastic stories around Derby days, but he also delves into the psyche of international fan culture. And he's done one on Scotland, where he was up in Scotland, which... he tries to remain positive through the episode, but it's just littered with stories of, you know, Scottish fans that have been following their team for 30 and 40 years who've just had nothing to tear about. So it's a quite an interesting one. Where to here, Derek, for Scotland, though, for the rest of the tournament? I mean, it's a brutal way to go through this this. You know, the first game, I mean, they're pretty much sunk, aren't they? But they must be feeling pretty ordinary in camp, you'd think.
Like, it's not dissimilar to Wales in the last major tournament. They got torpedoed pretty early and had a pretty miserable looking tournament. I suppose what Scotland have got to do is look at the next game, which of course is against Switzerland, and then they've got Hungary left. Obviously, Switzerland, Hungary looked like a very competitive game. Both sides looked you know, they looked a class above Scotland. But I remember the route Scotland took to get here. I'm pretty certain they took advantage of the what do they call it? The not the Europa League, the Nations League to get in here. So it does allow teams like Scotland to make it through, but it also means that, you know, with all due respect for Scotland compared to some of these other teams, they're just not the same class. And look, they don't have a Gareth Bale that they can wrap all their hopes around. They're very much trying to be bigger than the sum of their parts. So the best they can do is go, you know, that was a bad day at the office, and they've got to get a result against Switzerland. They've got to get at least a draw to go into that Hungary game with something to fight for. Obviously, if they don't get the draw in that, in, you know, they lose to Switzerland, the tournament's over before it started.
There were far greater issues than the goalkeeper, Derek, but what did you make of Angus Gunn's performance for mine? He had both the lead boots and the limp wrists on, and you can't have them at the same time. He's got 28-year-old goalkeeper Liam Kelly of Motherwell and 31-year-old goalkeeper Xander Clark of Hearts in the squad. Does he look elsewhere? Not the only problem, but I thought he was pretty poor.
Yeah, he wasn't great. And look, this is the same goalkeeper that I think was in goal for Southampton when they lost 9-0 to Leicester City. So he does have a bit of a record, and he would have been having some post-traumatic stress disorder, I think, as some of those Germany goals were flying in. Yeah, look, I think as an underdog team, at the very least, you can have a solid goalkeeper. He comes from a great lineage, of course, the son of Brian Gunn, the epic Norwich City and Scotland goalkeeper. But look, I think they could do worse than change it up. But there's problems all over the pitch. I mean, Scotland never really got going. They ran 9 kilometres less than Germany. I mean, that's a problem too. You'd think that as an underdog, you should be doing the majority of the running. You should be covering the park and making it difficult. But, you know, they were training cones for most of the goals. And part of that is to do with the quality of Germany's interplay. And look, Kai Havertz has taken his Arsenal form as a false nine into this German team. And he was causing all sorts of problems. So, yeah, look, they're going to have to replace the guy that got sent off as well. So yeah, there are plenty of headaches for Clark. The good thing is they don't have to wait too long. Willem, they've got Thursday morning, I think Australian time, they'll be back out and playing Switzerland.
My game comes from the following evening between Albania and Italy. Two-time winners and reigning champions are the Italians up against Albania, who had just qualified for the second time, and a bit in this culturally as well, pretty close geographically, and some colonisation as well between the pair. But it was the little brothers who, within 23 seconds, went bang.
Federico Di Marco with the throw, and it's a really terrible one as he gives it away. Oh, it's an outstanding start. Nedim Bayrami. Oh, I've hardly ever seen anything like it. Less than half a minute on the watch. A stunning start. Albania have arrived at this Euro.
Bayrami, the fastest goal. We just heard it there in Euro's history. And despite how early it was, it would have been a few Italians groaning, given their recent history in the international sphere. But credit to them, back on the horse straight away and quickly hit the lead through Bastoni and Barella. The second, a brilliant goal from outside the box, a little bit akin to the hit from Fulkrug in the earlier game, Derek. And for the rest of the first half, it looked like a case of how many they toyed with them. And Euro specialist Federica Chiesa, who was instrumental last time around and looked set to explode, but has battled quite a few injuries at Juventus. He was back and he absolutely had his way on the right flank. But as the second half wore on, it had a bit of a different feel. And as we got closer to full time with the margin of just one, you felt that Albania would get a chance. And that did come in the 89th minute through Ray Mane. He was slipped through, but I think it was going in edge, only for it to glance off the back of Donnarumma. Doesn't get easier for Albania. They're onto Croatia and then Spain. But that 3-0 result between between Croatia and Spain might just hold Albania in good stead if they can pick up some points and then keep that goal difference nice and low, which is a little bit blown out through the rest of the group. But what did you make of it, Michael or Derek? Will come to you.
I don't know if I need to do a correction here, Willem, but I'm pretty sure that in this tournament they're doing rating people's performances against each other.
Oh, head to head
goal, but head to head before goal difference.
Yep.
Therefore,
no, you're right to be
Italy didn't need to run up a cricket score against Albania. They just needed to win, because right. You know, because it won't come down to that. So, yeah, no, I know what you mean, though. Psychologically, you think it's all about goal difference. And to be honest with you, I don't think that's a bad way to decide it. It's pretty clear cuts on the league table. You know, I think when it starts coming head-to-head, I think it can get a little bit tricky. But, you know, Albania aren't out of it. But, you know, we spoke about Croatia in the main show in the week, and Croatia will be hurting. They need to put a marker down. They absolutely have to win this game against Albania. Both sides have to win, or else it's or else they'll be starting to pack the bags, starting to check out the hotel. So that would be a fascinating one.
And coming to you, Michael, for your game of the week, a little bit more local to our Australian audience.
Absolutely, and if anyone can crow about a game of the week, it's me on this one. Heidelberg 1 and South Melbourne 0, the old Melbourne NSL derby. The two giants of Victorian football faced off in the NPL. John Anastasiadis, a famous championship-winning player with South Melbourne. His father was a fantastic Heidelberg goalkeeper. He's currently coaching the Burgers, and they got a goal in the fifth minute, and it was something very special from the Japanese import Asahi Yokokawa. Let's listen to former SBS commentator Greg Blake. He gives a great description of this goal. Let's go.
Oh, well played then by Yokokawa.
Oh, bang! That's a goal.
That is an absolute Bobby Dazzler.
That is.
Wow, on 5 minutes. Yokokawa, the Japanese.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. He launched a cannon shot, and it was never erring. It was never going to miss. Lopez could just look at it. And on 6 minutes, the Warriors are in front.
Yeah, well, that's... which is, what did you say? That's where the spiders live. Up over in the top there. Yeah, that was a tremendous strike.
And that English sort of accent voice is former Socceroo legend Jimmy Rooney. Explaining that the ball went where the spiders live, in other words, the top corner. So well done to Yokokawa, who has made a big impact for Heidelberg this year. The Burgers went on to win 1-0. They actually had to deal with the last 35 minutes of the match with 10 men after Dominic Faller was dismissed in the 55th minute. But that puts Heidelberg on top of the table now, and they're having a season to remember. Nothing like beating your rival 1-0. Having said that, on Facebook, I did notice a few South Melbourne fans say that they needed to give Heidelberg a win every now and again, and it was left to former Heidelberg champion Theo Selimides to point out to the South Melbourne fans that Heidelberg had actually won 9 of the last 12. So well done, Burgers.
How much of your busy day do you ascribe to NPL Facebook comments, Edge?
Only when Heidelberg beat South Melbourne.
Nice. Fair call. We'll do our teams of the week. We're going to jump. Actually, how are we going to do this? We're going to stay with you, Edge. You're going to have to perform some gymnastics to explain why the A-League squads, One Team, One Dream, as coined by Adam Maloney, is a team of the week. Although, given the A-League All-Stars, maybe that's your little hook in.
Yeah, well, I just thought I could make the rules up of a go. I just thought it's an interesting time of the cycle of A-League. There's not, when these big international tournaments on, a lot of people don't pay attention to what's happening in the local A-Leagues, but clubs have been quietly disposing of their players, cleaning shop, cutting contracts, and there's been some interesting movements and some very sort of significant players are leaving the A-League. Adelaide, obviously, Nestori Iraconda off to Bayern Munich. We know all about that. But Ben Halloran, he's out the door. Nick Ansell's out the door. They have signed Archie Goodwin for the Newcastle Jets. Brisbane Roar, they've been able to have a net gain. Van der Sarg from Adelaide United, Warland from Adelaide United have come in to the club. And their big signing is Marcus Furkanis from LA Galaxy. Central Coast Mariners, we talked about the re-signing of Mikkel Docker. They've pretty much, everyone's just waiting to find out what's happening to Josh Nisbet. MacArthur, Luke Bratton, cross town from Sydney FC. He's joined MacArthur FC, and they've had a host of outs, not to mention the three boys that were caught up in the betting scandal, Willem. They're out the door as well. But Daniel De Silva, that was an interesting one. He's gone, and Rafael Borges Rodriguez has actually gone to... from MacArthur to Coventry City. That's a fair transfer. Melbourne City, Jamie McLaren, gone. Curtis Good, gone. Terry Antonis, gone. There's some reasonable names, as is Nuno Reese. Jamie Young, the keeper, has re-signed at Melbourne City. Melbourne Victory, Brimmer, Economides, Negro, they're all out the door, including Tony Popovich. He's out the door as well. Newcastle Jets, Jason, the biggest news there, Jason Hoffman has retired. He's going to be joining the head office. And their big in, obviously, is Maverick Sport Partners as the new owners. In Perth, there's been a huge turnover already. They've made some interesting signings, believe it or not. Josh Risden, former Socceroo, who'd been at Western United, he's coming into the club, returning home. Brandon O'Neill's returning home. And also, there's been a whole heap of outs at Perth. There's going to be a big changeover. However, they have made some interesting re-signings, including David Williams, who is an interesting one. Sydney FC, Robert Mack is gone. Luke Bratton is crossing town to Macarthur FC. And the big one for Wellington Phoenix. Everybody is celebrating the move of Alex Paulson to AFC Bournemouth. And believe it or not, they've re-signed Costa Barbarossa. So there's some interesting. What about Western Sydney Wanderers and Western United? We're waiting to see what happens with the coaching gig at Western Sydney Wanderers. A lot of talk around Alan Stajic. And Western United, the outs there, Lustica, Risden, Rukavica, and nothing really to report in terms of their ins, but they have re-signed Sebastian Pasquale.
Nice. Well, if you make the rules up as you go, I'm going to do the same. So I'm going to barrel forward to my hot topic, and then Derek will come back to you for your team of the week. That, because I wanted to chat about some of the ructions in the senior managerial positions in the A-League Edge. So you mentioned Alan Stajic. He looks in line as we go to air, or as we record, I should say, for the vacant job at the Wanderers. And that decision has reportedly been a big factor in Paul Lederer stepping down as their chairman. He'd apparently favoured a Dutch candidate, but was outvoted by fellow board members Glenn Duncan and Jefferson Cheng. Jefferson Cheng played a key role in Stajic's appointment as Philippines women's boss ahead of that Women's World Cup a couple of years back. Stajic set to be replaced by David Zrilic, who's been floating around as a big, big name, or, you know, how could you put it? An assistant with credentials probably not befitting an assistant's role. I mean, spent time at Red Bull and in and around the German and Austrian setup. So he's ready for a main job, and they reckon that might just be at Perth. Meanwhile, Melbourne Victory have confirmed Popper is gone at the completion of his three-year contract. Marco Monteverde, a friend of the show who writes for News Corp, has been behind the scenes with all this, and he says that Popovich actually would have been willing to accept that significant pay cut to stay at the Victory, but found out that the club, and particularly John Didelitzer, had been inquiring over the availability of Patrick Kisnorbaugh, and that was the deal breaker. Don't work behind my back, said Popper, according to Marco. So it's all going on. Nick Montgomery also still without a job. He had been targeted by the Wanderers, but didn't align with Eddie Bosnar, their football manager, who now might be following Paul Lederer out the door anyway. So, Edge, what to make of all that? And my final point is that what about those Victory fans who are finally proud of their club again? Could well be dished up proud Heart City man Kisnorbaugh.
Yeah, I tell you what, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I can't get over Paul Lederer leaving after getting rolled at board level. That is absolutely massive news. He's piled money into that club like you would not believe. That's got, I mean, Alan Stajic, wherever he goes, there's a little bit of controversy, isn't there? And that's not a great way to enter a club when an icon and such a stable force at that club has left the building over a coaching appointment. It's just extraordinary stuff. I mean, there's got to be some incredible backstory to that. That is just amazing stuff. And John Didelitzer, Tony Popovich lining off up against John Didelitzer. It's been pretty well known for a long time. Those guys have professionally worked together admirably, but haven't seen eye to eye about many things off the field. So, interesting. Patrick Kisnorbaugh, he had a successful time at Melbourne City and an incredibly
very much so. Yeah.
Unsuccessful very, very successful time in Europe. So, yeah, interesting to note what will happen when Patrick Kisnorbaugh, if he gets the gig at Melbourne Victory, how the fans will respond to that.
As a Victory not fan, sure. That is yuck. That's all wrong. Derek, flipping back to you, my friend, having cooled your jets through that A-League chat, your team of the week is Denmark. Let us know why, please.
Yeah, of course, Denmark got off to a decent start to the Euros. They had a 1-1 draw with Slovenia in England's group. Keeps them very much in contention. Obviously, they will play England in a pretty crucial match. I mean, they're all crucial, aren't they? But that one in particular for Denmark. Not that they will be too alarmed after the England performance. Great to see Eriksen scoring as well. Bearing in mind the last time we saw him on a pitch at the Euros, he just died. So to come back three years later and score a goal is a terrific thing. But this wasn't the reason I picked them. I picked them before a ball was kicked in this tournament. And that's the reason. The reason being that the Denmark men's team have refused a pay rise to ensure that their female counterparts can earn equal basic pay when they play for the national team. Which I think, sister, you know, I think these Scandinavian countries do kind of leave the rest of the world for dead sometimes when it comes to some of the equality between the two games. But I do remember that Denmark, didn't they make some kind of statement before the Qatar World Cup as well? I think it was to do with the migrant workforce. Again, I can hear Edge in my ear saying you can't mix politics and football. This one isn't about politics, though. This is just about equality. So the men's team are going to help the women's team get to par, which I think is a good thing. So yes, the games are going on. We're very excited about the Euros, but well done to the Danes for showing us the way to go, Willem.
Yes, nice. I'm surprised I hadn't done that a little bit earlier. That was a sort of movement that cropped up with some trailblazers maybe 5 or 6 years ago, Edge, the Socceroos and
exactly. I was just going to say
that Danes, well, we're in on it. We've been doing that for a couple of years.
Slow to the party, Derek. I mean, the Socceroos mm-hmm. did that 5 years ago.
Great. And yeah, look, I know that with the latest collective bargaining agreement, you know, the Matildas are, you know, that gap, such as it is obviously just getting narrower and narrower. Every time. I know that Gianni Infantino said at the start of the year that he was hoping for equal prize money between the men's and women's World Cups, but this would be dictated by the broadcasters and the sponsors, which to me felt like a bit of a get out there. But yeah, look, I think we should just acknowledge progress when we see it, chaps. And well done. Well done, Denmark.
Nice, Derek. And we'll stay with you for your hot topic. Not a savoury one, but one that always picks crops its head up around major tournament time.
Yeah, look, I mean, I was going to go for something more trivial, like Dutch coach Ronald Koeman picking his nose in front of 100 million people on TV and then giving that schnoz a big old clean out and then eating it. Shades of Yogi Love.
Yogi, sniffing
his fingers after, I don't know what he did. He put him down his trousers or something.
Sorry,
we're going from this to racism, so I am shifting gear. I was following the England-Iceland game. This was the pre-tournament friendly a few weeks ago now. I did notice that they'd used BBC sort of live commentary when the game had finished. He'd chosen to lead with a picture of Bukayo Saka. It was quite a good image. He looked despondent. He was on the turf. I did think it was odd, though, because I didn't think Saka had started the game, and I checked. And he'd come on as a substitute, but he hadn't really done anything. And normally with these things, you have a photo of one of the key protagonists, you know, the captain, the manager, something like that. But I didn't think much of it. And then a couple of days later, I read this story that the UK press, particularly the tabloids, had used Saka as their image for all of the back pages in the newspapers, alongside negative headlines about England. And, you know, again, just brings back those undertones of racism. The BBC had to admit that they'd also used pictures of Saka as well. So, you know, this comes off the back of the abuse the player received and his teammates when they missed the penalties in the final of Euro 2020 or Euro 2021. I just thought it was interesting. It's one of those things that is kind of institutionalized. It's in some cases, it might be subconscious. People aren't consciously thinking about this, but it is something to keep an eye on, particularly with this England team as they progress through the tournament, because it seems to me that the English media have already picked out some of the bogeymen, and it feels like this young player who doesn't have an Anglo name like Jude Bellingham, you know, like it's slightly different sounding and what have you, that that somehow makes him, you know, a more of a target for the abuse rather than some of the other players. So, yeah, look, sorry to end on a bit of a down note, but yeah, I just thought that was really interesting.
No, it's really got to address it as it comes. And Edge, to close out, one on your boy, Mbappe.
Yeah, Kylian Mbappe. Well, sport and politics, I don't normally like talking about that, as Derek just referenced in the his game of the week or team of the week. I should say that those of us that are a little bit concerned about the state of Western democracies around the world and increasing sort of polarisation or of partisan debate and politics, there was quite an interesting intervention by Kylian Mbappe, who got on the front foot with some reporters at a press conference ahead of the Euros. While Mbappe didn't go as far as publicly confirming a political allegiance, there's been a lot that's been made of his relationship with Emmanuel Macron, isn't there, in terms of Macron's very, you know, private meetings with him and very public shows of affection and so forth. So obviously France, for those people who don't follow French news closely, is there's a lot of social and racial tension in France, as there is in the United States, but particular at the moment. They go to the polls while this European Championship's underway. And I just thought Kylian Mbappe spoke incredibly eloquently when he was challenged by some reporters about what was his message to young French people. This is what obviously he spoke in French, and this is the English translation, but it's incredible words from such a young person. I thought it was worth reflecting on. He said, "I think we're at a crucial moment in our country's history." He said, "You have to know where things stand and have a sense of priorities. The European Championship has a very important place in our careers, but I think we're citizens above all. And I don't think we should be disconnected from the world around us, and even less so when it concerns our country. We know that we're at a very important moment in our country's history, so this is an unprecedented situation. That's why I really want to address all the French people, and especially the younger generation. I think we are a generation that can make a difference. Today, we can see that the extremes are at the gates of power, and we have the opportunity to choose the future of our country. And that's why I'm calling on all young people to go out and vote, to really realise the importance of the situation. I hope that my voice will carry as much weight as possible, because we need to identify with this country. We need to identify with our shared values, which are ones of diversity, tolerance and respect." So he's referring to the movement, the far-right movement that's gaining momentum in France, and all the polls have them very competitive in this upcoming election. So incredible words from such a young man, Derek, what's a big issue that's facing France. And of course, it's unlike Australia, they have voluntary voting over there, so that the rallying cause to the young people: get out and vote, have a say in the future of your country. But also importantly, it's addressing the social tension, which is, if you've been in France lately, you can feel it in the streets. It's very significant. Derek, interesting words from such a young man, very eloquently spoken. What do you think about that?
Well, look, it's pervasive across Europe at the moment. I mean, there are big elections everywhere in the world this year, but in Europe in particular, Germany, where the tournament's being hosted, we had that terrible survey that we spoke about pre-tournament. But obviously the sentiment has to come from somewhere. And look, I think, well, Macron and Mbappe are big mates, obviously, or Macron tries to be big mates with Mbappe. And he is the poster child, really, for what successful, diverse country looks like ultimately. And there's no point in having a diverse, rich national team of Zidanes and Desais and Mbappes and Vieiras and Henris and all the rest of it, if that isn't reflected in the wider society. And France is facing a bit of an exponential crisis at the moment. The Le Pen movement got in the European elections and caused a bit of an upset, which is why this whole thing was called. So but this European tournament is not just a celebration of, you know, the countries themselves, but it's a celebration of all of the people that have traveled to Europe, whether it be recently or generations in the past across all countries. And it is a celebration of the success story of migration. Of course it is. So, fair on Kylian Mbappe, and maybe Edge just wants politics and sport can join hands.
Absolutely, and have a positive impact and on those young people getting out and voting. Well, Derek, we've lost Willem, who's in Dusseldorf. Maybe he's gone down to have a pretzel and a second go at that port knuckle. So we might just say thank you, Willem, for doing such a fine effort on Stoppage Time. And we might wrap it up here and say to all our listeners out there, enjoy the Euros, enjoy the Copa America, and we'll see you next week.